going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett. Thank you for listening. Once again, thanks to Capital for the amazing intro. And since we've done this show, it's a couple years now, which is wild. I was actually talking to our super producer, Show Ali, about this because, let me be honest, I program this show for an audience of one, me. I talk to people who I'm curious about and interested in. And we're talking about the topics that we often discuss and the genres and sports that we often explore. And it's a lot of soccer and a lot of women's sports. That's really where the Venn diagram meets. And going to be on brand this episode. We're going to give you some soccer, some footy, some football, depending on where in the world you're listening to this. And some women's sports always, because everybody loves and watches women's sports. Why don't we start with a bit of both? And our Canadian women's national team, who, as you've heard, because we've talked about it and analyzed it on this very podcast, has appointed a new head coach. Bev Priestman, as we now know, is out post-Dronegate. And in is a real coup for the national team, for the country, quite frankly. That's Casey Stoney. I'm sure you've heard the name if you are a footy fan. She's a former manager of Manchester United and the San Diego Wave, which was a expansion franchise when she led the Wave. And she's really, in many ways, the perfect fit to lead the next iteration of the women's national team as they get set for a World Cup in 2027, as we in Canada get set for a World Cup in 2026. When you hear her speak and talk to people who know her in the game, she's really about building trust with her players and the community. And I found it really interesting that in her opening presser, she talked about wanting to leave a legacy right here in Canada, which is music to our ears as a still growing nation when it comes to football and soccer. So I want to know how she grew up in the game, and that's going to maybe inform how she helps us grow as a nation in the game and helps a really talented group of women grow, and hopefully for the first time in my recollection, helps them just focus on football, and the Federation helps them reach their dreams rather than it be an obstacle they have to overcome. No pressure, Casey Stoney. Let's listen to and learn from Casey Stoney as we go deep on the new boss of the women's national team. So, Casey, we have something in common. Both grew up on a cul-de-sac where that was the stage of playing sports. Both had parents who used whatever means they could to have the resources to put us into sports. It was football for me in North America, tackle football. You, it was the world's football, as we call soccer. I wonder, how did those early experiences shape and form the player and now the coach that you eventually became?
I think it just formed my love for the game. It kind of got that like flame burning, and I just always loved playing out in the street. I loved playing with boys. I loved having a ball at my feet. I was no different as a player. I just loved the game, loved playing, loved competing, loved training, believe it or not. And then even now, like as a coach, just genuinely love the game. And now as a coach, I see it differently, and the nuances of it, the tactical elements of it. And like the game of chess, you almost have to play with the opposition's coach when you're playing games, and learning about players and development. Like there's just so much of football to learn and grow within. And it's just a huge passion of mine.
I have some friends who were players and went into coaching, and I'm always fascinated. Do you ever fully transition
once you get your badges, are you a coach or do you miss playing? Do you see yourself as a player? Do you wish you could still get stuck in?
I think it's something you have to be really conscious of. I think when I first retired and went into like management, you put the same expectations on the players that you had on yourself as a player, and that's what you've got to be really aware of. Like, sometimes you're not managing players that have got the same mentality as you, that maybe haven't even got the same ability as you, and you're still putting that expectation on them. So I think you really have to work hard to separate yourself as a player and a coach, and like really, really remove the playing side from you. And that's not easy. I think it takes a few years to transition and really kind of work through retirement. It's something that I've had to work really, really hard at. And now I feel like I'm in a position where, like, if people ask me to play, I love the game. I still would love to play, but I just don't now, because I'm like, right, I really need to focus on being a coach, being the best version of a coach I can be for the players, and making sure that I'm meeting their needs rather than, you know, what I think they should be doing because I was a player.
You were a player that got an opportunity at the international level early, first cap at 17. When you look at your history of bringing young players through, does that experience educate that in terms of how you do it?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I was exposed really young in a senior environment. And like I said, I played internationally at 17. So that is young. Like, players aren't generally coming through that young anymore. They're tending to make their international debuts a bit later. But my feeling and thoughts are always, like, if you're good enough, you're old enough. But I also need to support you at your age. So I need to make sure that I holistically support you and make sure that I give you doses at the right time, take you out at the right time, but support you as a young person. You're still really, really young in the environment, and make sure that person is developing at the right rate. And you protect them. You know, I think it's really important you protect young people from the expectations and pressures that can be put on from outside.
How do you do that now when you have limited and ad hoc access to them? You go from the club game to the international game, and someone like you, I imagine, would always want to be on the grass with the players. And now you have these huge windows where you don't have them. What's that transition going to be like for someone with your personality type?
Yeah, it was obviously a consideration when I took the job. I am a day-to-day. I like being in the day-to-day, but I feel like I can still do that in some degree here. It's about making sure the players know you're accessible all the time. It's getting out, it's watching games, it's making sure that you're touching base with them on their performances and their development, and then building really, really good relationships when you're on camp, you know, and helping them when you have those moments, and making sure that those moments are you make the most of those times that you're in. So yeah, it is different. It is an adaptation for me, but I can utilize my time in other ways to make sure that I'm still connected to the players even when they're not in camp.
There's some differences to leading an international side to a club side. A club side, obviously, the key performance indicators are wins and where you're on the table and trophies and attendance. And certainly those metrics matter internationally, but there's also an aspect of this being the nation's country and inspiring people and growing the game and having more people play the sport, thus they're healthier and have better mental health, et cetera, et cetera. Have you had the chance to think about those differences? Does any of that intrigue you?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a responsibility. I think when you're building a club side, you're very focused internally on what you're doing and how you're going to win, and obviously developing your players in that environment. I think when you're leading a country, like, you're leading a whole nation, and that comes with responsibility to ensure that you're playing a brand of football that excites the fans, that you're engaging the younger players, like younger girls, that they want to pick up a ball and play, that, you know, you're leaving an imprint in the game in terms of long term rather than just short term.
Talk about a brand of football that is exciting. Canadians, our football has long been very organized, very disciplined, maybe not as clinical, aside from the all-time leading goal scorer in Christine Sinclair, who's not obviously in the setup anymore. How do you change that?
I think we have to bring the focus back onto us, not on the opponent, on what we can bring in terms of what we can do with the ball, how we can create more chances, how we can get more numbers higher up the field, and that we can have control of the ball whilst attacking with a purpose. So you know, it's going to be a real focus on in possession. The team's already organised. They can already defend. Yes, there's things we can improve in that area, but there can be a heavy focus on what we do with the ball so that we can create and score.
It sounds almost verbatim like what Jesse Marsh has been talking about since he took over. How pivotal was his appointment, but him personally, in your appointment happening?
Yeah, there was a long conversation when I was going through the process with Jesse, because obviously he'd gone from club football international as well, and just getting to speak to him, understanding, you know, how he manages his time, what he does, and also like just knowing that he's very supportive of the women's program, that he wants it to be a partnership across men's and women's teams, and that we will be one, was massive for me in terms of having that, because that just doesn't really happen across the game anywhere. So He was really key in me, you know, considering taking the job.
You say yes to Canada, you say yes to international football, but really, from a day-to-day perspective, you say yes to Kevin Blue. That's who you're going to be working for and dealing with. When he comes after you to recruit you, one, what'd you think? And what convinced you that this would be a good partnership?
I think there was a few reasons. I think when I started the process, it was quite an extensive process. It took about 4 months. I had many phone calls with Kevin Blue, with senior players, then an extensive interview process, and it involved me going to Toronto, meeting some more people as well. And throughout that process, I just got a real good feeling about the people in the organisation, the leadership of Kevin and the direction he was taking the team in, the culture of the team, the humility, the hard work, and just real good people, and the talent that's in the pool right now and in the pathway. I think it's a really exciting time, especially with the NSL coming on board as well now and the professionalisation of the women's game across Canada. I think it's such an exciting time to be involved in soccer in Canada.
You talk about that culture, and with this team, when I look at the national sports organisations across the landscape in Canada, the unique thing about this team specifically and the women's side is that their alumni is engaged and feels still a part of that culture. You're coming into it. Is that a blessing, a curse?
No, it's a blessing. They were actually part of the process of my hire as well. So, you know, speaking to quite a lot of them and having them involved, I think it's important. You know, when you start the game, you want to leave the shirt in a better place. And I think that is very much their mentality of like passing down that mantle. And I think keeping them involved and then passing that mantle on and to the younger players to understand what the culture is and what the traditions are and understand what it is to play for Canada. I think that keeping them involved is really important.
So many of them have gone on to impact the game in different ways. So many of them, I find it pretty fascinating, have gone on to be coaches themselves. We in North America don't have as many female coaches as maybe some would expect. How in this role can you help to change that?
I think firstly, being in the role and being visible in the role is like you become a role model in itself. I think that's important. I think also, you know, getting out into the coaching workspaces and working with female coaches and also allowing my environment to be open to bring female coaches in to see what we do, how we work, and try and be a little bit of a mentor for female coaches is important. Like, we need more female coaches in the game. And I think one of my key responsibilities is to try and help the next female coach that is Canadian to be in a position to take this job one day.
I hate asking, you know, the victim of a problem what the solution to it should be, but you've worked in the game at so many different levels. So I'm curious on your POV. Why are we in this place in 2025 that we're still not seeing the level of representation, not just on the touchline, but really in the C-suites in football?
I think because the decision makers at the top generally are male and don't always hire females. I think there's also a lot of research that says that, you know, a man who isn't qualified will go for the job because he thinks he should get it, yet the female that's probably overqualified won't go for the job because she thinks she won't get it. We need to be in a position where we're, you know, putting females in positions to be successful, supporting them to be successful. And also the hiring processes, you know, they need to be looked at. And is it fair and proper in terms of who's being hired and in what positions? And it needs to change across the game. But unfortunately, soccer is a bit of a reflection of society in that sense.
No question. You've had different roles in soccer, and you've been a builder, whether it was in San Diego or in Manchester. You've had a blank slate to build a foundation. How much of those experiences will you apply to this new challenge?
Yeah, this is new. It's not a build, you know. It might be a little bit of a rebuild to some degree after the previous year, but this is now about using the experiences I've got in terms of, you know, the environments that I want to create and the philosophy that I want to embed in the team, but also, you know, utilising some of the staff that have been incredible in their roles and utilising them to make sure that I'm learning of, like, who can do what and how. And then also getting to know the player pool, understanding them and what their needs are and developing them. But for me, it's about just enhancing what's already there. There's going to be a change, obviously, in terms of the way we want to play. But at the same time, there's a steep tradition and history of women's soccer and producing good players. So I'm here just to try and enhance that and support it.
When talking about that tradition of producing good players, it seems like every generation, there's a couple world-class outliers that rise in Canada, whether it's Charmaine Hooper or Christine Sinclair and Carl Lang, or now Jesse Fleming. I am so excited for Canadians to learn more about Jade Rose and Olivia Smith and see if they can get to that next level. That's going to be a big part of your job. What is your feeling working with some of those young players that could get to that world-class level?
I actually we brought Jade Rose in with us. She was training at Wave last year. So I've had really kind of close working relationship with Jade, and I'm really excited to work with her moving forward. I think she's an exceptional talent, and it's about how we can push her game even further and develop it in terms of details. And the same with Olivia, like, she's a bright, really bright player, you know, understands the game, like, in terms of what's needed from attacking areas, very creative, very dynamic. And it's just about us now supporting her full development and exposing her to caps, making sure she's got experience and putting her in positions where she can be successful.
Well, you have time on your side. 2027, the next World Cup is, you know, just under 2 years away. How do you expect to use that time to taper towards having a selection, a team, an identity that can compete at the world stage in 2027?
Well, I think it's a blessing that we got that time. It's a luxury and that we're going to really use and utilize. We've got a free game window coming up, so opportunity to, you know, play games, not as much training. I think we've only got one day's prep before the first game, but opportunities to try and embed what we want to do, how we want to do it, get to know the players, get to know their strengths, and use the training windows and the game windows to really drill down on our identity and how we're going to win games. I think they're always, like I said, been defensively organised, but now it's about how do we create and score more goals.
So we've had a Women's World Cup in this country not that long ago. We are about to, before 2027, have a Men's World Cup partially in this country. You experienced a home Olympics and what that meant for the country and the sport. What do you imagine the 2026 World Cup could do for the sport in this country?
Oh, it's massive. Having like a home World Cup and the amount of new fans and momentum that it will gather and inspire, you know, more people to play the game, to watch the game. I think it's going to be such an exciting time for Canada. And I think obviously with Jesse at the helm, I think they're going to play some really exciting stuff. And there's going to be a lot more new Canadian fans off the back of the tournament.
I can't wait. And you talk about inspiring those girls. I want to, before I let you go, circle back to your story. And when you were getting into the sport, what were some of the barriers that you had as a girl that you hope to eradicate for the generation coming through now?
There wasn't any teams. There was literally not a single girls team where I lived. There was no girls league, so I had to play in a boys team for me to play. When I reached 11, I couldn't play in that boys team anymore because you weren't allowed to play mixed sport. So I think opportunity is important, like creating opportunities for young girls to play, and also having really good coaching within those opportunities and having the right resources. I think they're really important things, like opportunity, resource, and good coaching programs are key things for me that need to be provided across the world, really, for girls to be able to access the game.
The fact that there weren't any teams and really there weren't sophisticated professional leagues, what did that mean for you personally on that journey? What were some of the things you had to do to overcome some of those hurdles?
I had to work. I worked pretty much my entire career. So especially when I was working and I was training for a major tournament, I'd have to like get up at like 4:30 in the morning, train for a couple of hours, then go to work, do a full day's work. Then, you know, have a couple of hours off. Then I'd go and train with my team in the evening because we could only get pitches like from like 8 till 10 at night. And then that would just repeat itself. So, you know, it was difficult to recover. It was difficult to train. We didn't train as much as we should have done as a team because obviously we didn't have finances and people had jobs. I had to take unpaid leave to go to major tournaments and stuff like that. So there was lots of barriers. Nothing stopped me playing, but it wasn't really ideal for trying to go to major tournaments and compete at the highest level.
Well, we can't wait to see you representing Canada and helping us compete at the highest level. You start at Manchester United and out the gate it was 12-0, so no pressure, but we're expecting something similar here with the Canadian Women's National Team. Really appreciate your perspective on your personal journey and how that journey now includes our national squad and where you look to take it. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thanks so much to Casey. You can hear the passion in her voice. I can't wait to see all the good things she does on and off the pitch for the national team. Someone who is a frequent guest of our show and who continues to do good deeds on and off the ice is Sarah Nurse. And I want to give Sarah her flowers, a couple of reasons. One, loved the fact that she got the game-winning goal in the second iteration of the battle on Bay Street here in Canada, right down the street from where we're recording in Toronto at the Scotiabank Arena. Another sellout, the second biggest women's game in that venue, the third biggest women's professional game, period, as the biggest was in Montreal at the Bell Centre. But Nurse is focused on not just her experience in hockey. She's teaming up with Chevrolet in the Good Deeps Cup, which is back for a 9th season, which is wild to think that it's been around that long. And she's challenging some under 10 to under 15 minor hockey teams from coast to coast across our nation to figure out a way that they can impact their communities with some acts of kindness. The exact same thing that she's done. And happy to announce that Nursey Nights are back this year, presented by us at Rogers. So if you want to be a part of a meet and greet with Sarah Nurse, make sure you're paying attention. But she's raising money right now with Chevrolet, and you Canadians have until March 6th to rally up with your youth hockey teams, carry out some good deeds, make a difference in your community. Submit those. There's a live leaderboard which showcases the top-ranking teams. There's a milestone tracker which is going to track the number of good deeds completed across the entire nation. And there's an added bonus for the first 50 teams that sign up for the Good Deeds Cup. So go do it right now. You receive a $250 pizza party just to kick off your efforts before you even get started. Nursey is real intentional with what she does, how she does it, and why she's doing it, maybe most importantly. So I want to tap in with her and figure out why this philanthropic endeavor made sense. Let's listen to and learn from Sarah Nurse of the Toronto Scepters, talking all things Chevrolet Good Deeds Cup. We have another year of the Good Deeds Cup, and you're involved once again. And we've talked about this before. So many brands want to partner with you, and you are super intentional on the ones you partner with and how you do it. You are the opposite of me. I would just be like, yes, secure the bag, sure. Talking about dog food, don't have a dog, but happy to do it. But you were really selective. Why did Chevrolet in the Good Deeds Cup in its 9th season, which is wild, make sense for you?
I think it's so interesting because when you're partnering with different organizations and different brands, like, it has to be something that excites you and something that's authentic to you. And if it's not authentic to you, it's not going to excite you. And so when I think of the Good Deeds Cup, it brings me back to when I was a young one playing hockey in the local rinks and thinking about how we would do different fundraisers and aid in different charities and help out in our communities. And I think that this is such a great way, the Chevrolet Good Deeds Cup, to be able to give back, obviously, to different communities while rallying together with your teammates and just having a great time. So I absolutely love this organization and what it does for the community.
So this season, with teammates rallying, the results haven't been as much as a good time as they were for the Toronto franchise, now the Scepters, in year one. Give us a letter grade on how things have gone thus far from your perspective.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting. Playing professional hockey is such a privilege, and it's also very hard. Showing up every single day, going out, battling with your teammates and not getting the results you wanted is never fun. And obviously we want to win for ourselves, for our staff, for our players, but we also want to win for the fans who come and see us every single day and support us every single day, whether they're watching on TV, coming into the arena and seeing us, or supporting on social media. And so we know that we have some work to do as we continue on with the season, and we're very optimistic with the group that we have. And so we're excited to put on a show for Toronto.
Year two has been a show building off of the success across the league in year one. And I find it real fun how sophisticated the conversations have become about analyzing trades and about players making a name for themselves to play internationally based off of their performances in the league, where in year one, I think people were just happy to have professional hockey at this level for women. What have you made of the continued and changed conversation around the league?
I think it's interesting because when you talk about professional sports, like, it's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows. And I think last year, obviously, it was also new. It was also exciting. We had a place to play hockey professionally, and now it's professional sport. And I think when you have conversation about the WNBA, you have conversation about the NHL, other major professional sports leagues, it is about performance, and it is about the implications, whether they're world championship, Olympics, you know, beyond that national league is very important. And so I think that we're hitting that point where we're having those conversations and really analyzing performances of teams, of players, which I think is great because that's what's going to continue to propel the sport forward.
You are not just an athlete, you're a sports fan. When you look across the landscape and see unrivaled start in the U.S. with women's basketball this spring with the NSL starting, are you someone who's looking at what different leagues is doing and thinking, okay, that's cool, like, how could we incorporate some of that infrastructure or resources or culture into what we're doing?
I think it's always fun to pull from different organizations, and Unrival looks amazing. I haven't been able to catch a game yet, but I've been watching on social and catching the highlights, and it just looks like such a cool concept. And obviously, knowing the WNBA season is opposite ours, it's a little bit shorter, and so they have kind of a different leeway, a different time frame to play with. But I think that it's been so cool to be able to watch, and getting to watch sports all year long as a sports fan. Like, if I could watch hockey all year long, I definitely would. And so I think organizations like Unrivaled, the NSL coming in, and then obviously the Toronto Tempo starting up next year, I think it's just going to be a very exciting time for sports because we're going to have more sports than ever to be able to consume and watch.
And I would be remiss if I didn't talk to you before I let you go about Nursey Night. We back up. We're doing it again. Mm-hmm. It's something that other athletes and leagues could potentially steal and borrow and pull from what you've done and are continuing to do. What does Nursey Night look like in 2025, now that we're doing it again?
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of similarities with last year. Ultimately, we want to provide families with the experience of professional sports and having the opportunity and access to come to a professional sports game. And so we're not only going to be just in Toronto this year, we have some dates planned around the league. So traveling on the road, which is going to be really exciting, but ultimately it's that experience, it's that connection, being able to meet the families and the young people after the games is so meaningful to me, and being able to connect with the different organizations, Hockey Equality, Black Girl Hockey Club, Hockey for Youth are just a few of them. So it's pretty exciting being able to speak with girls around the league. I know that Abby Rock, I think, is planning on doing something very similar in New York. So to be able to share ideas, I hope that there's different iterations of Nursey Nights all around the league and beyond, because it's so meaningful and it's so impactful to the young people who we're able to see.
Well, I'm not a kid. I'm not a hockey player. I'm not a girl, but I am a super fan. So I look forward to following the journey, following the Nursey Night tour, and seeing what you do up close and personal with the future of the game, the young girls that are super fans. So as always, thank you. And thank you again for spreading the message of all of the good deeds you're doing personally and helping Chevrolet help Canadians do good deeds as well.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Sarah. And if you want to enter, visit www.chevroletgooddeedscup.ca, where you can learn more right there. All right, we're going to take a break, but we've got more for you. Going to turn the page back to soccer, CPL style. Don't go anywhere.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. It is the Going Deep podcast. And time flies. It's that time of year where just around the corner is Valentine's Day, guys. Well, I suppose, and ladies, make sure you make your plans early. Don't forget. It's one that always sneaks up on me personally, so I have the calendar notification to let me know. It's also, you know, February means Black History Month, so make sure you're celebrating, because we only get 28 days. But also, February means CONCACAF Champions Cup. And if you're saying to yourself, what is that? Is that Nations League? I'll give you a little bit of an explainer, because it's a really exciting tournament that blends different leagues, different styles, and is starting to expand and take some notice, especially when you look at the involvement of Canadian clubs via the MLS and, of course, the CPL. So CONCACAF is, you know, governing body here in North and Central America and the Caribbean. It brings you 10 different countries, essentially, and their best and their brightest football teams in a knockout-style, bracket-style tournament to determine who the continental champion is. So, essentially, our version of UEFA Champions League, just not with the amazing song, The Champions, those were the horns, if you couldn't tell. So, the 2025 edition is actually the 60th of the competition, but you're probably just realizing it now because the tournament just expanded its format last year. So now 27 different teams are qualified to compete, and yet they get in many different pathways, winning your league titles like Liga MX or MLS, obviously. If you look at the Canadian teams, the TELUS Canadian Championship winner, Vancouver Whitecaps, got in. The CPL Shield winner, the Forge FC, and the North Star Cup winner, the postseason champion, Cavalry FC from Calgary, is in. Tournament's broadcast on One Soccer. If you're listening in the U.S., that's Fox Sports 1 and ESPN 2 in Central America and the Caribbean. But when you're putting these different teams together, five-round knockout competition with each round, except for the final, being a two-legged home and away tie, you're getting great exposure for our Canadian franchises in other places of the world. And I think that's the next question, is how does the MLS and the CPL become a bigger brand, become a global brand, and bring some market share for the growing football economy in Canada to the rest of the world? Certainly has to be the business model of a league like the CPL. We've seen it with international ownership of a club like York United. And we'll see what the next version that looks like if there's great success in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. But if the league is going to grow and expand and get to the next level, it'll be based off the success of our next guest, someone who's had great success in the sport for quite some time. And that's Kostas Smyrniotis, who spent a lot of time developing great players within the academy system at Sigma FC, developing a great club with Forge FC, but now is working with the league as the executive vice president of soccer. So I wanted to catch up with Costa to figure out, one, what does that actually mean? Two, what are his KPIs, key performance indicators and express goals of his work within the league? And what is his viewpoint on how the game has grown in soccer, as he's one of the principal people that's helped it grow thus far? So let's go deep. Let's learn everything we can about the growth of the CPL via the CONCACAF Champions Cup.
So I'm so excited to pick your brain about the league and the sport and the sport in the country. But I first am more so curious on how your role is going for you, someone who has been so invested at different levels of the game, now working at the league office. And, you know, sometimes people who come from teams, they see the league office as the bad guys, and you're on the other side now. Being able to see the sport through that lens and help shape it, what has the experience been like, and what drew you to the role in the first place?
No, I appreciate you having me on and having this chat. But listen, football in Canada is still is still a baby in a sense of the professional game and trying to tie it into the global game. So there's a lot of building you have to do. You really have to roll your sleeves up in Canadian football, which means you got to end up doing a lot of things. You kind of have to be in a lot of different places in order to help build up the sport. So you can look at it from doing it within a youth landscape. You can look at it doing it within a professional club and at the league. So I think it's just a natural evolution, if you want to call it that, in terms of having a good grasp of all the different areas within Canadian football and ensuring that we continue moving this great project forward.
The evolution and finding solutions has changed over time as the realities have changed. There was an era where there wasn't professional football in the country, so that impacted things. There was an era, obviously, where there wasn't domestic professional football in the country. Now, soon, there'll be domestic on both the men's and women's side. From someone who's been at every level, how has the realities changed as some of the avenues have changed over time?
Yeah, no, I think it's the key term there is just opportunity. I think that's the one part that was always missing. And, I've said this to many people who've asked me a similar question. It's just, we had all these great people that whether they were former players, coaches, people involved in the sport, but it was very difficult to aspire to something more, let's say after a playing career, when there was just no jobs in this country, there was no opportunity. And I think what we've started to see now over the last, 6+ years with the CPL on board, and obviously with a women's league coming on board as well, is, this ability to kind of keep all this talent in our country and help shape the game going forward for the next generation. And that's what's really exciting. That's what keeps me, in this role. This is what keeps me in this space. And I think what's more exciting is it's great for people like myself, but I think what it's going to really do is provide this massive opportunity for the next generation to be able to help build this game in this country.
So what keeps you up at night? What worries you as you're trying to build the structure and build the game globally throughout the league? What are some of the pain points that you've experienced?
Well, I think it's just, again, you can look at it as a pain point, or you can look at it as an opportunity. Football is a global game. You cannot, you know, there's not a day goes by that you can't turn on the television or any other way that you consume the sport and watch, you know, the best players in the world from different leagues, different countries, different international competitions. You know, we're spoiled for in terms of what we have available to us now. So in one sense, you get to see the best of the best. And then all of a sudden, you try and figure out, now, how do I kind of grow this league? How do we grow the game in this country to start moving in that direction? How do we all start moving in the direction of closing the gap to the international game? And I think we've started seeing a lot of progress, you know, through a lot of the hard work being done within our communities, within our local clubs, with our professional clubs, which is now obviously translating to our national teams. But, you know, the opportunity lies that, you know, there's still a lot of more work to be done. And I think that's that opportunity is what should excite everybody in this country.
The CONCACAF Champions Cup is an opportunity. How does the CPL being involved in it to help some of the things that you just described?
No, it's massive. I think if you talk to anybody, everybody understands the UEFA Champions League, the ability to watch, like I said, best on best at all times and watch some tremendous matches. I think we had a few of those this week as well, some great games. You know, and I love what you know, the new leadership at CONCACAF has done in terms of rebranding this tournament, putting new energy into the tournament. And it's becoming, you know, a must-play-in type event. The best of the best in the continent being able to play in such a tournament. And, yes, it's been dominated by Mexican clubs. And, obviously, the majority of the clubs in the competition are from Mexico and the U.S. But it was a priority of ours from the start, you know, to be able to ensure that our teams were able to participate in this event. And while the gap is very big currently, I think you've seen some really, respectable and tremendous results over the years. You know, we have one of our clubs, Forge, you know, that has played in a CONCACAF event ever going back to 2019. This is a massive experience, you know, gained. Being able to go to parts of Central America where we've seen over the years, you know, our national teams and other professional clubs have really struggled in those parts of the world. And being able to go down there, compete as a, you know, brand new club, brand new league representative has been massive, you know, for their, you know, the evolution of that club. And now with Calgary in their second time participating in the event, this is going to be massive in terms of building that club and the tremendous work that they've done there. And obviously now getting to represent the CPL as champions, CPL champions in this year's CONCACAF event.
What does success look like? Is it results? Is it advancing? Is there something beyond that that will determine what success for the CPL and the individual clubs is?
Well, the easy answer is yes, right? Because ultimately, you know, sport is that at the end of the day. We do all check the score at the end of the game, and they're usually, for the most part, has to be a winner. So, yes, that's one part of it. But then, you know, it's other things. It's closing the gap both on and off the field. And I think that's what drives us all forward, is being able to, success can be measured, like we said, in results. It could be measured in terms of awareness, in terms of attendance, in terms of people, you know, getting behind the sport and their clubs and being really, you know, part of the growth of their clubs and their communities and the game within their communities. It becomes, you know, when you do well in these tournaments, it's a little bit the shop window, as I say, to the outside world to really understand what's going on in the Canadian Premier League versus the Costa Rican League, the Mexican League, the Honduran League. And, you know, that's a little bit our window to the outside world. You know, we play in these domestic competitions in each one of these countries, but where you really get to show the product and the improvement over time in the quality of play comes to when you play in these events. And what we've seen over the last few years with our club's participation in these events, they have exceeded all expectations in terms of, you know, where we are as such a young league and clubs. And, you know, so we're really excited about the opportunity going forward and very thankful to also have two of our clubs be able to participate in such a prestigious event.
When you talk about the growth of the game and you look at, you know, the influence that you can have in your role, there's two parts of it. As you mentioned, there's certainly the growth on the pitch, but then there's the growth off of the pitch. at the stage that the league is at right now, how much of your time and energy is invested in one or the other? Is it more important to focus on field, or is off the pitch where the gains can be found?
Well, I think it's just finding the right balance, and to tell you that, you know, you have the magic equation, that's not going to be the case. But, you know, we know a lot of the efforts are in our communities. We want, you know, our communities to, you know, our clubs within our communities to be one. We want, you know, the opportunity for everybody who loves this game, or, you know, new people being introduced to this game and families. You know, we want to make our clubs and their communities their club of choice. And I think that's very important, become the part of the fabric of the community. We know, obviously, the amount of kids that are playing this sport in this country, in our communities. You know, our job now is to be able to translate, you know, all that participation, you know, into fans for life. And, you know, and that's something that we haven't had in the past within our communities. You kind of played within your communities, but you kind of consume watching the game, you know, in another country. You know, now we finally have the opportunity where you can do both in your own country and build fans for life, create opportunities for these young aspiring players, both on and off the field, you know, with a future in the sport. And that's the exciting part. And that's all the hard work we have to do, including myself, to kind of roll up the sleeves and make sure we're out there and making a great connection within our communities.
You come from a football family, so I imagine that football was passed down in that family. This sport is in many households. In my house, I was born into a United family. I was born into a Cowboys family. Those were much better when I was younger, not so great right now. But when you use your time at Forge as an example, how close are we to having that level of fandom that I'm using them because they've been the gold standard in terms of results, in terms of having someone say, I was born into a Forge family?
Well, I think it's happening as we speak. You know, we see it, you know, in each one of our clubs. You see it in the excitement around, you know, some of our big matches. You see it in the excitement leading up to Champions Cup. You saw it in Calgary at our final, you know, this past November with what, you know, the great excitement in that, you know, in that stadium in terms of the whole community showing up and getting behind their club and, you know, seeing a lot of young kids that are kind of taking part. And, you know, at the end of the day, all these young kids, yes, we said earlier, they have the ability to turn on a TV and see Messi. They have the opportunity to turn on TV and see other big players. You know, what the opportunity we have is they have the ability to be next to some of these CPL players. They have the opportunity to meet them in person. You know, they have the opportunity to give them a high five before and after the game. And those are special moments. You're getting an autograph. And, you know, for young kids, whether you're, you know, in take this the right way, whether you're Messi or whether you're one of the players in our league, you know, those moments where you connect, you know, and you put a smile on a kid's face, they remember it forever. And if that turns into growing the passion for these young players to remain in the sport, to continue competing in the sport and fall in love, you know, with our sport, then those are the connections that are so special going forward.
Rising tide lifts all boats, and there will be a World Cup in this country in 2026, as you look at that spectacle, what are some of the things that the CPL can do to make sure that you are ready and willing to capitalize on the fact that we're going to be hosting such a massive tournament?
Yeah, really excited about you know, obviously the World Cup here next year. I think we all are, everybody who's passionate about this sport. And obviously, it played a big role. You know, us getting the World Cup was, you know, in part, we had to ensure that we had a domestic professional league in place in order for the World Cup to come here. So, you know, there's a little bit of responsibility on our shoulders as well. But we take that responsibility and the key role that we can play. At the end of the day, we're all going to sit back and we're all going to enjoy this, you know, this great national team we have and cheer them on and push them to do, you know, the best possible. But, you know, what we can do is, you know, we kind of fill in the geography, you know, with all our clubs throughout the country to be able to celebrate, you know, our national team and, of course, the whole tournament, you know, at a local level. And this is an opportunity where we integrate, obviously, our league schedule. We can integrate, you know, other type of community events started by our clubs within our communities, but supporting our national team in the World Cup. And I think you'll see a big, a big role that we'll play in terms of doing that throughout in the lead up and obviously throughout the tournament.
We're far away from Jesse Marsh's first team sheet for that World Cup, but it would not be a surprise if we see some Sigma FC in the squad. For you personally, what's it like when you've been able to literally raise some of these players in the game, see them sign their first professional contracts, and you know, could see them playing in a World Cup in this very country?
I get pretty emotional when it comes to that topic. That's my trophy, you know, in terms of being part of this sport. And, you know, I've had the pleasure and the honor of being able to see, you know, a lot of the players that were pretty close to me and Bobby growing up, you know, and whether that's, you know, seeing them graduate out of the academy, whether that's seeing them play in a university match, whether in Canada or the U.S., playing on a youth national team to getting their first contract or being in a stadium where they're playing in a, you know, in a massive fixture and getting their first transfer, or then seeing them in Qatar at the World Cup. I think you can hear it in my voice a little bit. There's no better moment, and I'm so grateful, obviously, to have been able to experience that with them and play a very small role in it. But, you know, we have a ton of talent in this country. We have so much talent, you know, and I'm so excited about, you know, this talent, you know, growing, helping us grow this game in this country, and pretty excited for our future.
I don't want to make you choose among your children, but is there one that sticks out to you? Because you well know there are some players that no matter where they're born, if they were given a pair of boots, they were going to make it. But there's others where the village really had to raise them up and they had to have the sweat equity to make sure they fulfilled that dream. Is there one story that sticks out to you?
I got a lot of stories, which probably doesn't afford me enough time, you know, here to be able to go through them all. But, you know, I love all my children equally. So there's no one favorite in the mix. But, you know, with all of them, you know, we've had our ups, you know, we've had our downs, we've had, you know, amazing, you know, situation throughout, and I just take great joy to, again, you know, just being with them throughout that journey and getting to enjoy watching them play on a daily basis.
What the league has done is it's you know, become part of the global marketplace, and we've seen players move not just to MLS clubs but abroad. It's a great blessing, certainly, because it verifies the level of talent. It also is you know, tough to lose great talent within the league. But as you continue to track where players are going, how they're moving, what the development looks like, and the pathway looks like from this league, what are some of the learnings that you've found?
I mean, throughout this whole process, I mean, that's kind of been part of the mandate as well, is to create that platform. The biggest challenge we had with, you know, a system before without a professional league was it was very hard to be able to, and I think many players that, you know, and, you know, they've done a tremendous job getting themselves, you know, playing professionally overseas over those years. You'll ask them all and how difficult it was to get that first start, that first opportunity for somebody to open a door and give them a chance, right? I think we're starting to make things a little bit easier now. It's much easier when you have a domestic professional league. You have players that can start building their CVs as professionals, play important matches at a young age, play important domestic matches, play important matches in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, play important matches within the Canadian Championship, and now start building a CV. You know, you can actually scout them. You can actually get out there and watch them play. And this is going to help. It creates the foundation, you know, from which, you know, these players can then aspire to move on to a bigger league, to a bigger opportunity, you know, and that's what's happening right now, where it didn't exist, you know, not too long ago before the Canadian Premier League. So that's the opportunity that we kind of provide. And yes, you know, as each one of those players moves on and moves on in a, you know, in a good manner and does well, that opens up the door for the next one. We have our national team, you know, and when Jonathan David is one of the top, you know, strikers in the world, you know, people will, you know, rightfully so ask the question, where is the next Jonathan David in Canada? And, you know, when that question comes up, you know, the next, you know, the answer to that will be they're somewhere in the Canadian Premier League, which means there's more eyes on the league, there's more attention to the league globally, which then gives our players the opportunity to have a chance to succeed within this global football landscape.
That's the hope for the NSL on the women's side in Canada. They're obviously behind you in looking to fill out rosters and hire backroom staff, but I wonder how much room for collaboration there is on these projects moving forward, and how involved, if at all, you've been as they start to build the structure that you've been working on for some time.
I always say more football in Canada is always welcome, and I'm tremendously, and I know it is with all our colleagues at the Canadian Premier League, we're tremendously supportive of their efforts. We know the challenges. We've been through the challenges. We know the opportunity as well. And of course, you know, the one good thing is, you know, good football people, good people around the sport, you know, they're always speaking, they're always sharing ideas, they're always sharing best practices, what works, what doesn't work. And, you know, and like I said before, I think we're very supportive of the efforts, and obviously wherever we can cooperate, I think you'll see that take place for the better of the game here in Canada.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to continue to track the CONCACAF Champions Cup as we get some football. And then once spring hits and the season is in full swing, looking forward to seeing all of the clubs in the league back on the pitch. Really appreciate you doing this, especially because I know that you prefer to be behind the scenes. And so I guess player of the match is Laura Armstrong for making you do some work with us, but your perspective and expertise is so valuable, so thank you for spending the time.
Donovan, I really appreciate any chance that we can to put our players and the great people that are making this sport so special in this country, if any chance I can to bring them to the spotlight, I take that opportunity every chance, because it's going to take the whole village, right, to continue moving this whole project and, you know, the game forward in this country. So I appreciate your support. Would love to have you out at a game, whether it's at the Champions Cup or, you know, once the league kicks off in April. So let's make sure we make that happen.
Definitely. Me and my sons often enjoy a weekend watching York United. So you'll definitely see me on a touchline, although their grandfather, my father-in-law, is a hardcore Ford supporter. So,
perfect. So you know, we got the rivalry already in the family.
That's correct. There's already a fight as to what shirt they should be wearing as toddlers. So.
I won't comment. Yeah, I think you know which color I might pick.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that as young as they are, they've been to a championship, and it wasn't in the city of Toronto. It was in Hamilton.
So
thanks. Really appreciate it, Costa.
Anytime, Donovan. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. A monster episode. Shout out to Casey Stoney, Sarah Nurse, Costa Smirniotis, and you for listening. Make sure to like, favorite, share, and subscribe. And we are getting close to pretty big Super Bowl, so safe to say via the Fan NFL Checkdown, which you should also like, listen, favorite, and subscribe, or listen live 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern across the Sportsnet Radio Network, or via this very podcast, we'll have some more football discussion for you of the National Football League variety. So stay tuned for that. Take care. The champions. Do, 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 do.